Good morning, everyone. It's nice to see you all here this morning. My name is Malcolm, and I've been here at Community Church for about 14 years, possibly. So I'm nowhere near the big guns, but I'm getting a bit closer. And I'm married to Lucy, who's currently sitting beside two other gentlemen. For some reason. Okay, so I'll take an unusual turn at the start and ask you to open your Bibles, if you've got them. And if you've got a smartphone, this is a good opportunity to check Facebook and without anyone really noticing. So I'm going to be reading from Luke chapter 8, verse 43 to 48. Luke chapter 8, verses 43 to 48. And a woman was there who'd been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him, that's Jesus, and touched the edge of his cloak. And immediately her bleeding stopped. "Who touched me?" Jesus asked. When all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you." But Jesus said, "Someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me." Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she touched him and how she had been instantly healed. Then he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." I was kind of reintroduced to this story a bit earlier this year through a day that the counseling team did together, and it's sort of stayed with me a little bit ever since, and it's kind of been gnawing away at me. So I thought it would be good to talk about this morning. It's a story that, in one sense, it's quite easy to kind of, you know, read it quite quickly, and it's quite simple, really. And it ties in with, you know, various healings that are described in the Gospels around this time that were part of Jesus' ministry. But as I kind of dug a little bit deeper into this, I think there's quite a lot going on in this story. As I reflected on some of the characters and some of the interactions between them, I began to realize how much depth there is to it. So this morning I really want to use this story as a bit of a backdrop, I guess, to share some of the things that I found as I reflected on it. Life for the woman in this story was incredibly hard. Luke says that she was subject to bleeding for 12 years. Now, this hemorrhage would have meant she was in constant discomfort and at times significant pain. And I can only imagine how debilitating life was for her, how difficult it was to simply make it through the day, let alone to make it through 12 years. In some translations of this scripture, we're told that she spent all she had on physicians in a desperate attempt to be healed. Just think for a moment about all of the things that you spend your money on food, transport, clothes, technology, holidays, and we could go on and on and on. Imagine sacrificing all of that to spend all your money on one thing to try and be healed. That's what she did, and we know from the story that nothing came from that. As if that didn't make her life hard enough, We also need to understand the context of what this woman's illness meant in the Jewish society that she was in. Leviticus chapter 15, verse 25 says, "When a woman has a discharge of blood for many days at a time, other than her monthly period, or has a discharge that continues beyond her period, she will be unclean as long as she has the discharge, just as in the days of her period." So not only did this woman suffer the physical pain of her symptoms, not only did she spend all that she had in an attempt to be healed, but she was also considered by her society to be unclean. She was an outcast, an exile, a reject. Somehow, despite this, despite her pain and disappointment, she found the will and the courage to try one more thing. She'd heard of this man, Jesus. Perhaps she heard of him healing other people with leprosy, paralysis, blindness. By this time in Jesus' ministry, there seems to have been crowds of people gathering around him and following him. Tucked away in this mill, in this crowd of people, she reached out and touched his cloak. Immediately, Jesus knew something had happened. He stopped and asked, "Who touched me?" No one came forward. Everyone denied it. But he waited. And I imagine, as I picture this, I imagine that waiting, that pause lasting for some time. The woman wanted to hide. She was very, very used to hiding. She not only had a very painful illness, but it was a very visible one, which I imagine she would have tried her best to hide every day. She would have hidden from those who knew about her bleeding and considered her to be unclean. She would have hidden from those who didn't know about her bleeding for fear that they might find out. And here she is now, surrounded by this crowd, waiting for her to reveal herself. And Jesus wasn't going anywhere. Since reading and reflecting on this passage a little bit, I've been thinking about hiding, which is the reason for the title of the talk today, Out of Hiding. A couple of weeks ago, Lucy and I were on holiday with Lucy's family, and one of our nephews, who's one, is at that age where he's starting to interact a little bit more with other people, and everyone's kind of starting to take a bit more notice of him. And one of the things I would do with him on holiday was play peepo. So I'd hide my face in front of my hands. No, I would hide face in front of hands. Yes, face behind hands. Hands face like this. Wait for a few moments. Take my hands away and say peepo. And it never failed to get a smile from him. And I know that he's not the only one-year-old like that. My older nieces and nephews, quite a lot of the time they spent, especially on the wet days, playing hide-and-seek in the house. Now, hide-and-seek's quite an interesting game. It's not a complicated game, but it's quite an interesting one because it's one of the only games that I've seen kids play where the loser tends to be quite happy about losing. There's a certain amount of joy associated with being found, at least in the games that I watched the kids play on this holiday. And it's the moment of losing, it's the moment of being found that brings out the most joy. You know, I think in peepo and hide and seek, what children love is the resolution. It's the moment of being found. The hiding the hiding isn't really associated with fear because everyone knows that the finding will eventually take place. The excitement is in the anticipation of the inevitable moment of being seen, of being reunited and reconnected. Now, these are pithy examples, really, but they reflect, I think, a much deeper longing in us, and that's the longing for relationship and for connection. But there's a very different kind of hiding experienced by the woman in this story. The anticipation of being found is not one for her that invokes joy or excitement, but rather one of fear and dread. She is terrified of being found, because being found won't, for her, lead to connection, but instead it will lead to rejection. And that's the hiding I would suggest that we are more familiar with as adults. I hide all the time, every day. I hide by not making the phone call or writing the email that I've been meaning to for months. I hide by walking to the other side of the street to avoid an awkward conversation. And I know I'm not the only one. I hide by going onto Facebook to see what everyone else is doing, but not actually posting anything myself. Sometimes I hide from my own emotions, from what's going on in me, my own fear and anxiety, by choosing to fill my time and space with noise and activity, whether that's with others or on my own. There are many moments in my day when I feel like I want to hide. And as I've thought about this and read and reflected on this in recent weeks, I want to suggest to you today that the primary reason we hide is shame. Jean-Paul Sartre calls shame a hemorrhage of the soul, which is, when I came across that quote, I thought it's a really interesting use of language given the story that we're looking at today, where this woman has a hemorrhage in her body. He describes shame as a hemorrhage of the soul. Shame is a devastating emotion. We long for we long to be valued. We long to be enjoyed, and we long to be significant. And we feel shame when we experience or suspect that we're seen as deficient or undesirable. Brené Brown, who's a researcher on human emotion and in particular shame, says, shame is a fear of disconnection. It's a fear that something we've done or failed to do, an ideal that we've not lived up to, or a goal that we've not accomplished, makes us unworthy of connection. Shame is an intensely painful feeling of believing that we're flawed and therefore unworthy of love and belonging. Shame says, I'm not worthy or good enough for love, belonging, or connection. I'm unlovable. I don't belong. Sometimes I think we can believe that shame is one of those things that's reserved for those who've gone through significant trauma or difficulty in their lives. But I want to suggest to you that shame is something that we all experience. And it's not limited to some kind of dark, distant corner of our lives. I think it's something that's very commonplace every day. And it permeates all of the major aspects of our life. It's very common, for example, to feel shame about our appearance, what we do for work, how much money we earn, how we spend our time, how good a parent we are, what our family are like, and so on and so on. These are normal, everyday experiences. Shame involves the act of being seen or perceiving that we're being seen and judged by others, which is why hiding is so often likely to be a reaction to shame. I remember about 7 or 8 years ago here at CC, I was involved in the student work here, and I would come along on a Sunday morning to a gathering just like this, and there'd be, you know, students would come along, and there'd often be, you know, new students and new people. And I felt this huge sense of pressure to try and talk to and connect with these new students. And I personally find that very difficult. It wasn't something that came very naturally to me. And I suppose after a little while, I simply felt like I wasn't doing it very well. I wasn't doing a very good job. I wasn't good enough. But instead of trying to talk to someone about that, or reflect on that myself, I hid it. I didn't like it, and I hid it. You know, typically at the end of a service, and if you've been here for any length of time, you know that the end of the service is almost as long as the service itself. You know, I might go and chat with someone for 5 minutes, and then I'd slip out to the toilet, maybe go and get a coffee, maybe come back in, have a little conversation with someone else, and then feel this huge sense of relief when the whole thing's over and I can go home. But please feel free to talk to me after the service. Because even, you know, even saying that now and sharing this here, it feels a bit embarrassing. It feels difficult and vulnerable to do. And certainly at the time I felt ashamed and I hid. You know, one of the primary messages I think we get in our culture today is that you're not enough. That's how I felt when I was involved in the student work. I wasn't enough. You're not good enough. You're not rich enough. You're not safe enough. You're not happy enough. You're not beautiful enough. And I think these messages that we hear, sometimes quite subtly through our media, which can so easily become part of our thinking and our mental furniture, this message attaches itself to our shame, to our fear of disconnection, and to the belief that we're unworthy and unlovable. I would suggest that the woman in this story feels a great deal of shame. I imagine she wanted to touch Jesus' cloak and slip back into the crowd without anyone noticing. But Jesus, he understands that the physical healing is only part of what she needs. She also needs connection. She needs relationship. She needs acceptance. She needs dignity. He doesn't point her out or expose her. He waits patiently. Which is really interesting in the context of the story, because Jesus is actually on his way to heal a girl who is dying. And it says in the story that Peter said, you know, there's lots of people pressing against you and pushing against you, Jesus. Let's go. You know, he had the idea that we need to move on. We need to get to that next thing. So the context was actually one of urgency, but Jesus still waits. He waits for her to come forward in her own time. And the story says then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she touched him, and how she'd been instantly healed. She was trembling. I think she was terrified. I think she was terrified of the reaction she would receive from the crowd, and probably the reaction she would receive from Jesus as well. Because that was the reaction she'd received for most of her life. Rejection. But despite that fear, she shows incredible vulnerability. Not only does she come forward and reveal herself, she tells everyone her story and why she touched Jesus. She tells them her shame. She has a huge fear of being found, and yet she makes herself available in that moment to be found. And Jesus doesn't react in the way that she feared he might. He doesn't judge. He doesn't reject. He welcomes. He says, "Daughter," which in itself is a term of affection, a recognition that he sees her as part of his family. Jesus shows compassion. I loved some of the words we heard this morning in the worship. Words about being able to come to God as we are, and he is a God of compassion. I think it's a very difficult thing to be vulnerable like this woman was, to let others see the things we don't like about ourselves. Being honest about our weaknesses leaves us open to rejection. But somehow, we need to understand the flip side of that as well. And I think this story illustrates it beautifully. If we're not vulnerable, then we miss the opportunity to receive compassion. So I'll just say that again. Being honest about our weaknesses does leave us open to rejection. But if we're not vulnerable, then we miss the opportunity to receive compassion. If the woman in this story, just at the last moment, had thought, "No, it's too scary, I'll go home," how different her life would have been. I'd like to read a poem. It's by David White. And it speaks about being in that desperate and lonely and tired place, but also that it's in that place, that painful and dark place, that we can experience freedom. This poem's called "Sweet Darkness." When your eyes are tired, the world is tired also. When your vision has gone, no part of the world can find you. Time to go into the dark where the night has eyes to recognize its own. There you can be sure that you are not beyond love. The dark will be your womb tonight. The night will give you a horizon further than you can see. You must learn one thing. You must learn one thing. The world was made to be free in. Give up all the other worlds except the one to which you belong. Sometimes it takes darkness and the sweet confinement of your aloneness to learn anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you. If this woman didn't have the courage to allow herself to be found, how would she have experienced the compassion of Jesus? And at a deep, at a core level, And perhaps for the first time in her life, she understood she was worthy of love. I love that word, courage. We heard it earlier this morning. The dictionary definition of courage is the ability to do something that frightens you. And the origin of our English word for courage is a Latin word, cor, C-O-R, which translates as heart. So the root word for courage and the root word for heart are the same. Now, heart is a word that's very commonly used in Scripture in many different contexts. It's used negatively, to be hard of heart, to have a heart of stone or a calloused heart. And it's used positively as well, to be pure in heart, to love God with all your heart, or to take heart. To show courage, as this woman did, is to live from the heart. And to live from the heart, I would suggest, is to be vulnerable. Hearts, at least as they're meant to be, are soft and tender and easily damaged. There's so much warning in Scripture about the hardening of the heart. It's a theme throughout the Old and New Testaments. And I wonder if that's because it's something that is so easy for us to do. To keep our hearts open and vulnerable, on the other hand, is so difficult and often frightening. The perseverance of the woman in this story is remarkable. She keeps her heart open for 12 years. I don't think I've done anything for 12 years. She's still willing, after all that time, to be left devastated and disappointed if things don't work out. She's willing to live with uncertainty, with risk and emotional exposure. Jesus says to her, "Your faith has made you well." You know, we can often think of faith as belief. But I'm not sure that Jesus was really that interested in belief. I think he was far more interested in people's hearts. And I think the faith that this woman displayed was in choosing to be vulnerable, to keep her heart open to possibility and not let it harden. So let me ask you this question this morning. What does it look like for you to have the courage to be vulnerable and live from the heart? What does it look like for you to have the courage to be vulnerable and live from the heart? Is it for you making art that leaves you open to the criticism of others? I was chatting with Simon Ray earlier this week, and he told me this great quote. I hope I get it right, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, which I think he heard from a fellow artist. It was something along the lines of, as an artist, when you feel like you're standing naked on the street with everyone staring at you, you've made it to the start line. That's vulnerability. Is the courage to be vulnerable for you having a conversation with a friend or relative that you haven't spoken to for a long time? Maybe to tell them how much you value and appreciate them. Is it being a leader in your organization that's going through a difficult season when everyone else is criticizing and moaning? What does it look like for you to have the courage to be vulnerable and live from the heart? I'm coming towards the end of this talk. I'd just like to share a quote with you, which I came across recently from Theodore Roosevelt. And in this quote, he distinguishes between the critic, the person who sits on the sidelines and judges. He distinguishes between that person and the person who is willing to get in the arena and play the game. He acknowledges that in life we will fail because of our weaknesses and shortcomings again and again and again. But it's not our weaknesses and failures that define us. It's having the courage, the vulnerability, the heart to dare to live that matters. So this is Theodore Roosevelt. It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles, or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again. Because there is no effort without error and shortcoming. But who does actually strive to do the deeds? Who knows the great enthusiasms, the great devotions? Who spends himself in a worthy cause? Who, at the best, knows in the end the triumph of high achievement? And who, at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly? So that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. So I've talked this morning about our longing for connection and relationship, something we all share. I've talked about hiding and suggested that the primary reason we hide the parts of ourselves we don't like is shame. Shame being the fear of disconnection because we feel unworthy of belonging. We've reflected on a story this morning of someone who, despite her pain, disappointment, shame, and fear, showed the courage to be vulnerable and come out of hiding. I've touched on the compassion of Jesus, the welcome he offers rather than judgment, which we can only experience if we risk vulnerability. And I talked about courage, the ability to do something that frightens us and to live from the heart. And the one question I've asked you this morning, and it's the question I would invite you to ponder and leave with today. What does it look like for you to have the courage to be vulnerable and live from the heart?